Hello and welcome to the Squawker Talker podcast. It's been a long time, but we're back for an FA Cup semi-final special. Plenty to talk about, and I'm delighted to be joined by Will Hall, the Squawker editor. How are you doing, Will?
Not too bad.
I've also got a voice you'll definitely remember from the previous Squawker Talker podcast. We've got Mo Butt, the chief writer at Squawker. How's it going, mate?
I'm pretty great. Glad to be back.
Excellent. And then we've got Sam Long, who's the Ask Fans editor. How are you doing, Sam?
Yeah, good, thank you, Thomas.
And I should probably say my name, shouldn't I? My name's Thomas Rooney, and I'll be talking through these bits and pieces today on the Squawker Talker podcast. So let's get cracking on it. FA Cup semi-finals this weekend. First of all, Conte, Mourinho or Pochettino, who would we say needs the FA Cup most? Mo, we'll start with you on that one, because they've all probably need some success for different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you've got to go with Mourinho out of those three. I think they all need it. They all definitely need the cup. Conte's had a really weird season, like, where it's just like his tactics have not really sort of changed, but they're not really like worse, but they look worse. Pochettino just needs to win something, period. Although I don't think he really cares if he wins something. I think he's playing a long game for his own career. I think he's not bothered if he doesn't win anything, as long as he consistently elevates Spurs' level. Mourinho has to win something. Mourinho is constantly, all he ever does is go, I win things. If you talk like that, you have to actually win things. Pochettino's got a process involved. Conte had a process. It's kind of falling apart. He'll go do a process somewhere else. They develop players. They develop a system. They have something else there. Mourinho does nothing but win. That's all he does. So all he has to his name, to his CV, to his reputation is victory. So he really needs this. I mean,
he needs it. So I was just thinking, Sam, do you think, because my personal opinion is that maybe Tottenham as a club maybe need a trophy more than the other two, just because that's their best side in many years. They probably need a trophy to show for it. But when it comes to the managers, who would you say needs it most?
I think for me, it's probably got to be Conte. Pochettino definitely needs to win something to sort of vindicate the progress that Spurs have been making. But if he doesn't win anything this season, I don't think he's in any sort of jeopardy of losing his job. Mm-hmm. He's at the stage where he can kind of do anything that he wants. He's got a lot of stock with the fans. Whereas Conte, the tide has started to turn against him. And I think if he doesn't win anything this season, then he really hasn't got a leg to stand on and he's going to be out the door.
Do you think Conte's gone anyway, though, isn't he, Will, if he wins the FA Cup or not? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's the expectation. It appears unlikely he'll remain Chelsea manager beyond the summer. So, yeah, so broadly I agree with the other guys. It would be some mic drop for Conte to go out winning the FA Cup.
He would enjoy it, yeah.
Also be two trophies in two seasons, which is a good record. In terms of the immediate media reaction to who wins, who loses these upcoming games, I think Jose Mourinho is under pressure to do something in this competition this season, but long-term wise it would be a bit of a shame if this Spurs team, who've been, you could say, the most consistent English football team over the past three seasons, it would be a shame if they didn't sort of cement that with a trophy.
Absolutely, I think that's kind of where I'm leaning. I think Tottenham need a trophy more than the other three, but in terms of job security, it's probably Conte and Mourinho that need it more than Pochettino.
Yeah, but like we say with Conte, job security doesn't seem to be an issue, because I don't think he particularly wants much job security.
He wants to leave, he wants out.
Yeah. It's more of his legacy at Chelsea, I guess, he can say he won the FA Cup in his final game.
Exactly, I mean, it's some legacy already. I mean, they were tremendous last season.
Absolutely. But
I mean, it's just a shame for Conte, because the records they set last season about to get wiped out by Man City.
Yeah, that's true.
Never mind. You know, but no, he did really well in his first season. He struggled in his second season through player power, some poor investments. And I mean, let's not forget, Timo Bakayoko just hasn't worked out at all yet. He will do. I think he'll come good, but I think he's very much had a settling in period. I think that really destabilised Chelsea's plans, because without that midfield engine room working the way it did last season, they never had a chance anyway, because their squad was always too small. But now, without that midfield working, Kante's just had way too much to do.
Yeah, he's trashed it all on his own, isn't he?
Yeah.
And just specifically on sort of Man United versus Tottenham, obviously, do we count it as home advantage for Spurs, do we think? Because obviously it's at Wembley. I mean, they've lost their last couple of games against Man City and Juventus sort of at Wembley. But Sam, do you think it has any bearing on this weekend?
It's definitely a big advantage, but I don't think anyone was sort of playing that card when Spurs was struggling to find their feet at Wembley. It's kind of flipped now that they've had some good results. Of course, losing to Man City and Juventus, me and Will were saying that It feels strange that they are their last two games because that Juventus game feels like a long time ago. But Spurs are definitely settled into playing at Wembley now. At White Hart Lane, it used to be the fans very much on top of the players, really sort of ferocious atmosphere. Whereas at Wembley, it suits their game just as much. The bigger pitch, they've adapted to it, and definitely come match day, sort of heading into the same changing rooms. I'm not sure actually if they've.
They're in the away changing room.
Are they?
Oh, yeah. So maybe that could be. Wembley. A little psychological.
That's what I think is that I think they might have had a home advantage, a degree of it, if they've been the home team. But they're the away team now, and it's not like Wembley is their home. They've just learned how to play well there as the home side. I think now that they're going to be in the away dressing room, the whole routine is going to be different. I think it will. The home advantage will be nullified, but I mean, luckily for them, you know, United are terrible in big games, and Mourinho's awful to watch. So they'll probably, you know, get their. So, look, Mourinho, he's rested all his players, right? Didn't he, against Bournemouth? They didn't play any of their starters, so except maybe like two or three. So they'll be well rested, but I mean, what happened last time they played them?
Exactly, absolutely.
Just to come back at you, a big game comment. You look at their record in recent big games. I think they've won like four out of their past five.
That's true, actually. They have because
in 2018 they played themselves into some form in those big matches. Against City and Liverpool.
But the City thing was kind of like a massive. Well, Arsenal's not a big game. Come on, it's 2018.
Right, used to be. These are what we call like top six.
Fair point. No, look, I just think he's going to approach the game defensively, as he usually does. He got creamed last time he played Spurs. He had no idea how to handle them. City was a fluke result. They should have got battered. They didn't. It'd be more interesting if Jose Mourinho came out and attacked Spurs, because then that would tactically play into Spurs' hands a little bit and also enable it, make for a more fun game, let's be honest. Yes. But I just think he's going to park it and play it long.
So like I say, it was four out of the last five games against top six that they've won. But the one game that they didn't win was obviously Spurs. Yeah. So that's the other side to that coin.
You mentioned the Bournemouth game. Obviously, he made quite a few changes for that one. Do you think how similar will that team be to Sunday or Sanchez come back in?
Completely different. I think that he literally, with the exception of Pogba and Ander Herrera, who both got subbed off fairly early, I don't think anyone else in that team will start.
Do you think Pogba got man matched, didn't he? Did you
agree with that? He was very good, but then Pogba is always very good in a 4-3-3 with a fluid, dynamic front three ahead of him and no Alexis Sanchez. It's not complicated. It's not rocket science. You know, it's Man United have this amazing world-class player and they somehow manage to, Mourinho manages to make it somehow, make it hard to get him to succeed. It shouldn't be hard to get a player that good to succeed. Every time we've seen it consistently, 4-3-3 with a fluid front three ahead of him, and he's great, but Mourinho will put him in a midfield with Ander Herrera and Matic at the weekend probably, and let's see if that helps him. But he'll have Alexis Sanchez walking in his way, getting in his space. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of playing him on Alexis on the right, where he could get out of Pogba's space. But and let's see.
Ashley Young come back in for Luke Shaw, presumably.
Yeah.
Inevitably.
100%.
But he's actually playing well. Actually, Young. He's having a really amazing season. I don't quite understand it. Frankly, it doesn't make sense. But he's actually been one of United's best players this season, really. I mean, behind De Gea and Lukaku and Matic, maybe. It's quite remarkable, frankly. I don't know where it's coming from, but United definitely need to enter the market for a left-back because he's not going to do this again.
No, he's probably going to be in the World Cup squad as well, to be fair to him. Fair play.
What a season.
Said that 18 months ago, you'd have been surprised. just finally on Man United versus Tottenham, I don't know if we can push anyone for a slight prediction. Will, what are you saying?
It's like I say, I mean, I like the look of that Man United big game record and think, maybe they have sort of, Jose Mourinho's sort of like, he's resurrected his sort of like world class ability to just manage single games and get a result out of them. But then Spurs were just streets ahead of them last time they played. I think because it's Man United and Spurs have that monkey on their back of trophies and I think a sort of narrow Man United win.
I think I tend to agree with that, Sam.
I fancy Spurs to win 2-1. They didn't play particularly well at Brighton. They played like they had the FA Cup semi-final on their mind. But I think with Dele Alli getting a rest and Harry Kane being Harry Kane, I fancy Spurs to get it done.
Yeah, I'm going to have to say Spurs. I think Eriksen's banging form, Dele's banging form. Harry Kane didn't really play that well against Man United the last time they played. No. So he's actually got a point to prove, which is rare for him. He's not got much to prove. So I think though that front three, Dele and Eriksen are in banging form. Kane has got a big point to prove after when they beat Man United, but he was quite poor. So I think Spurs 1-0, maybe 2-1. Mm-hmm. I think United might take the lead, actually, to be honest. But I think Spurs, they'll get complacent, sit on it, and Spurs will come back.
Absolutely. Sam?
Also, it's going to be interesting to see if Toby Alderweireld starts.
Yes, he came back in, didn't he?
He came back in against Brighton. So it's going to be interesting whether Pochettino actually drops Davinson Sanchez, who I would argue would be pretty gutted if he does have to drop out of the side, because he's played well this season. But Alderweireld and Vertonghen back together, I'd back them to stop Lukaku all day long.
Absolutely. Okay, we'll move on to the next semi-final, Chelsea versus Southampton. We've spoken about Chelsea a bit before, so we will lean on Southampton a bit. Were they wrong to gamble on Mark Hughes? I mean,
he was the one manager we didn't really mention when we were talking earlier about who needs this FA Cup most.
Yeah,
that's obviously
he might need it more than anyone.
And it's not particularly going well so far. I think they've conceded 9 goals in 3 league games under Hughes. So, I mean, first of all, they're down, aren't they? And they need the FA Cup as a bit of a bonus. What do you think?
They need the FA Cup. I mean, and the thing is, I mean, they made a mistake appointing Pellegrino in the first place. That was not a good... I mean, shouldn't have sacked Puel. Pellegrino, not a good replacement. And then they took way too long to sack him. And then when they did, they compounded it by appointing Hughes, who is not what they needed at all. Hughes was a great addition, great pick at Stoke, where he sort of changed the tone of the club from Tony Pulis. You know, he shifted it. You know, whether or not he did well at the end, you know, okay, fine. But he did change the way that club played football and that club's entire identity. But that's not something you do in half a season. You know, that's not something you need to keep a club up. And I don't know, you know, Southampton were in trouble. They really were. They needed a manager who understands how to get a side to score goals and win games by narrow margins. And you look at the way they played against Chelsea, for example, and they were really good, and then they just sort of petered out, and they didn't control the game, and Chelsea just...
Yeah, that's been the story of recent results for Southampton, I think.
They start well.
Yeah, because the Arsenal game is another example of that, where they sort of... They look like their tails are up here.
Yeah, and then there's no staying power on the side, which is, you know, kind of symptomatic of Hughes, really. That's where you kind of need, of all people, like someone like Tony Pulis, really. Mm-hmm. Just someone that's going to grind out some wins, get a goal by whatever means, and then just sit on it and be like...
Yes, except with Southampton at the moment, even if they go 1-2 up in this game on this weekend, I'm pretty not... It's not over, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you wouldn't, they could just wouldn't buckle. Back
them. Well, yeah, Chelsea's demonstrated that.
Exactly,
yeah.
Absolutely. And
they did play at Wembley last season against United. They played, I mean, I know they lost.
Yeah, the
game,
but
they did play well then. So they got form at Wembley.
And just finally on Southampton, can we see them getting anything this weekend? Or do you think there's going to be a Chelsea win to go to the final?
Chelsea win.
Sam,
I think Chelsea win. Yeah.
Easy.
2-1.
Yeah, Chelsea win.
I just kind of want Mark Hughes to take over at West Brom for a couple of days, just so he relegates all three teams, to be honest. But that's it. Man United versus Tottenham and Chelsea versus Southampton. Looking forward to them this weekend. Okay, next up, we're going to look at this weekend's Premier League action. We're going to start with Manchester City, obviously confirmed as champions before their game against Swansea. Be a bit of a party at the Etihad, to a point. What can we expect from a Guardiola side with no trophies left to play for? Will, what do you think? Do you think it's going to literally be a no-show? What do you think they want to finish well?
In terms of the rest of the season, I think these upcoming games are going to illuminate some of the... sort of like where does Guardiola take this seaside next? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the question of Aguero, who has featured more prominently this season than many... some might have expected, given sort of the incompatibility issues. Like, could Aguero play in the Guardiola system? He's out injured, obviously, for the rest of the season after undergoing knee surgery. So it would be interesting to see whether Guardiola uses the run-in as a sort of chance to sort of work out how he sees his sort of his attacking lineup shaping up. Mm-hmm. Obviously, his track record for developing young talent is something that could come into play here. Mm-hmm. We might see a sort of Phil Foden figure a bit regularly. Whether or not Benjamin Mendy can come back before the end of the season, I'm not so sure. I know he's back in training. Bernardo Silva, another player who wasn't involved perhaps as much as he would have liked at the start of the season, he might sort of
Do you think in reality it's more important for a few players than it is Guardiola?
Well, I think so. I mean, there's obviously lots of records to be broken for this side. I think they're chasing the points total records and the goals total records.
Yeah, they need to win three of their last five games to break both records. Wins and points, they'll break them both if they win three of the last five.
Absolutely, and so. Pep will enjoy that, won't he?
Yeah, it's nice, but I think the real work has been done. They've won the league, mm-hmm. and they've won it in some style. I think, you know, the points record and the wins record, that'd be nice, but it's not essential. I think what we'll see from Guardiola here is I think he'll play the kids a lot more because now there's less pressure on them. You know, he's always wanted to integrate them, but he's not really been able to. Mm-hmm. I mean, Zinchenko's played a lot, I suppose, but that's mostly a function of injury. I think we'll see the kids play more. We'll see the backup players play more. We'll see tactical experimentation maybe because he knows his 4-3-3 system works. Maybe he'll try out some different systems, different ways of playing. I agree with Will. It's going to be interesting to see what happens to Sergio Aguero in the summer because I think he's done really well this year. I was a big, massive, enormous critic of Sergio Aguero under Pep Guardiola last year because I just think he didn't get it. But this summer, this year, credit to him. He's really knuckled down. He's worked on other parts of his game. He actually is starting to get it. He's been rewarded with that, with more minutes and form. Obviously, he played a little bit more than maybe he would have done because Jesus got injured. But I think we'll see tactical experimentation in the kids. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be fun to watch City actually in these last few days. Cause I think Pep will really go kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. And it's Aguero got in the PFA team of the year for the first time, wasn't
at
it?
Last.
Which is like, of all the seasons he's had, like this one shows you a lot about how much he's still, you know, bagging in the goals that he's got in this season.
Yeah.
Sam, just quickly on Swansea, do you think they'll be pleased that the title's wrapped up or from their point of view?
Probably not pleased. I don't think anyone's going to be pleased having to play Man City at the moment. But I would say that City, with the sort of pressure off, as Mo says, it's going to be interesting to see mm-hmm. how they play because I don't think they're going to be holding back, as it were. I can see them sort of really having a good go.
Mm-hmm. And just finally, Mo, you're looking forward to the Etihad party, or is that not? You're going to be switching off? Let's move on, shall we? You didn't want to say anything.
I didn't know you said that, sorry.
That's okay. End of the road for West Brom is the next topic. They're down as well. We talked about Southampton, we've talked about Swansea in a relegation battle. For West Brom, they'll be relegated if they lose to Liverpool, and Swansea get a point away to Man City, which is likely or unlikely, depending on what you think. But West Brom, they've gone about it all wrong and last few months, haven't they? And they're done for.
They are. definitely done for. We say the end of the road, it feels like they've been relegated for months and months. Mm. I mean, I think the fact that they won at Old Trafford and they still have no chance of staying up kind of says it all for the state of affairs that they're in.
Yeah, it was all about Mourinho after that, wasn't it? Rather than West Brom winning the game.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think West Brom are going to be in trouble in the Championship as well, to be honest. Mm. Their squad is going to be pretty sort of decimated. They haven't got a manager in place. Okay, Darren Moore's done okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're really going to struggle in the Championship, but I would definitely be tipping them to sort of be battling for relegation rather than fighting to come straight back up, especially with the latest news about their finances sort of being run into the ground.
I think we have to do a bit more generous. Darren Moore's done very well. I think they look compared to how, I mean, they've been rubbish under both Pulis and Pardew. I mean, okay, Pardew you can understand because I mean, what the hell is Pardew doing getting jobs in this day and age? But
I think he's done for now.
He's not done for. He'll get another job. He's too charming, man. You can't send out that guy. That's how he gets his job. He just comes shows up and like, hey, how you doing?
Charming parts.
You know, he is. You can see it in his face. But look,
he's charming until you steal his managerial balance.
He's
accused of doing.
Yeah. But look, seriously, Darren Moore, I think West Brom against Man United, Old Trafford, they look more, I mean, yeah, United were rubbish, but West Brom were more organised and disciplined than I've seen them all season. They genuinely outplayed United and deserved the win, I thought, and Moore's done really, really well. I don't know if he'll stay with West Brom. I kind of hope he doesn't because, like as Sam says, it's a sinking ship, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hope he gets a coaching job somewhere else because I think he looks like a really, really bright coaching talent.
Yeah, I think the fans will be on board with him if he gets the job as well. So,
oh, yeah.
Be interesting.
The fans would love him.
It's obviously a massive summer for them because obviously they could look at Sunderland as an example of how it can continue to go wrong.
I think as well, So, like we say, their relegation could be confirmed, or it might not be. Man City might repay the favour that they gave them by beating Man United last season, and then just beat Swansea, and then even a defeat to Liverpool means they might be still alive for another week. But that said, if they are confirmed as going down, there's still a very slight thing to play for, in that it's important to not finish bottom of the Premier League.
Yeah,
this is true.
I mean, it's bad for morale. If you look at the teams that have finished bottom over the last 10 years, I don't think there's one who's come back up, or even really looked like coming back up in the previous season. Subsequent season, sorry. So, yeah.
I think there's a chance they could avoid finishing bottom. I think with Moore in charge, I think, you know, they've picked up a little bit. I mean, it's quite funny. You look at them, you think they'd be terrible, but they actually have made the least defensive errors in the Premier League this season.
Really?
Four, which is incredible. You'd think they'd have made loads, but yeah, they've actually, I feel maybe that's a symptomatic of how unambitious they've been, maybe. That they've just been hoofing it long and not making errors that way. But it's interesting how that works. But look, I hope they don't finish bottom. I think, it's been nice having them as part of the Premier League furniture for a long time. Plus, you never want Salomon Rondon to finish bottom. Salomon Rondon's a lovely guy.
Beast. We'll move on from West Brom. Obviously, a big few months for them. It's also a big few months for Arsenal. I mean, they're playing this weekend against West Ham, but that's kind of, it's all about the Europa League for them, to be completely honest. is that enough for Wenger to justify staying in a job if he wins the Europa League? I'll go with Sam first with that one. If he wins the Europa League, does he stay?
I think if he wins the Europa League, then he will stay, yeah.
If he doesn't win the Europa League, will he stay?
The stubbornness of Wenger, I think, will keep him there. It's difficult to say whether it's enough to justify him staying, because if he finishes outside the top four and wins the Europa League, then that's probably progress from last season. But then it's how we're judging his progress in terms of, if he was a new manager and he had the season of finishing outside the top four and winning the Europa League, fans would probably be pretty happy with that. Mm-hmm. But as he's still, his team is still being plagued by problems, and he doesn't seem to have been able to sort of
just fix any of them, really.
Yeah, it's the same old problems for Arsenal. Yep. And I mean, if he can't fix it in 20 years, he's not going to fix it in another two.
Yeah, I mean, look, first things first, he's going to stay whether they win the Europa League or not. He's not going anywhere. Arsenal are very cleverly set up for where Wenger leaves. Mintislat is in there. They're actually setting up to be, so that they don't get struggle when, like United did, because they're actually trying to build a modern infrastructure around a decidedly old school manager, which is what United did do. So, you know, Arsenal will be fine when he does leave, but I think he doesn't want to leave yet. I think he'll be take a while.
What's that? Decision, isn't it?
Yeah, and second thing, they're not winning the Europa League. They're about to get buoyed off by Atletico Madrid. Are you kidding me? Unless Atletico massively bottle it, which they do against Real Madrid, but not against many other teams. That is going to be brutal, man. Jack Wilshere is going to walk in there swaggering like a gangster, and Gabby's going to come in there and slap him about a little bit, showing what a real gangster is. It's going to be absolutely hysterical. It's going to be great. I really can't wait. Because the one thing is, I think Atletico will sit back and defend, and they'll let Arsenal play their football. So we get to see nice good football from Arsenal. But then at the same point, Arsenal will just find a brick wall in their way every time they try and attack. And then I think I fancy Atletico to pick them off on the break. Griezmann against that defence.
It could be interesting, for sure. Just in terms of Arsenal in the Premier League, obviously it's their away form has been beyond horrific, sort of in 2018. I think the only Premier League team yet to pick up a point in the calendar year. Even then, their home form is up there with the best in Europe. So obviously their away form will has just been, it's inexcusable, really.
Yeah, like you say, only Premier League team not to pick up a point on the road in 2018. I think they've lost five or six away games in the league on the bounce now. Mm-hmm. Obviously they're at the Emirates this weekend against West Ham.
Yeah.
I think
more than likely pick up the points.
But we'll probably see a sort of routine Arsenal win. Mm-hmm. And then the next time they go away, it will be...
It's a nice pattern, to be fair.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the Premier League's weekend action. We look forward to it. Okay, the Copa del Rey final this weekend. Barcelona versus Sevilla on Saturday. Barcelona can equal the record for the most consecutive Copa del Rey trophies. Mo, are they going to do it?
Probably. You'd think so. He rested basically everyone except for Coutinho against Celta.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot who they were for a second. Potentially. Yeah, against Celta. and they should have won the game, really. Celta Vigo equalised with a handball. Iago Aspas slapped the ball in and it didn't get recognised for their free. It's very, very, very clever little bit of yeah, what's dark arts, I suppose.
Yeah, I like it.
Shenanigans. But it was very good. No, but it was he rested the entire team. So yeah, they'll have all their, you know, fatigue has kind of dogged them a little bit. Mainly Iniesta and Suarez, but you know, Iniesta and Suarez are key players for the side. So they've gotten a nice bit of rest. Busquets will have a bit more rest as well. Of course, he's not fully fit, so that's always good. I think they'll win. They're a better team than Sevilla. Sevilla have kind of been going a bit off the tracks since Bayern Munich. Kind of, I mean, they've had a weird inconsistent season. They haven't really played well at all all season, yet they've somehow pulled some big, you know, impressive wins out of the bag. It doesn't really make any sense. But, you know, I mean, they're below Betis in the table right now, so that's funny. No, I think Barca will win. I think they'll put up their first team. It's the league is all but in the bag, right? So the Copa del Rey final, since they got looked at the Champions League, Copa del Rey final is huge because it's a cup final. It allows them to make a European double. A domestic double, which would be their third in four years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going back to start Luis Enrique's reign. So that's very impressive. Domestic dominance, you know. And establishing yourself as the best team.
And what have you made of the first season under the new manager?
I mean, it's been good. It's been very good. You know, they completely and utterly bottled the Champions League in an almost historically unprecedented way, which is hilarious, and they deserve to be laughed at and scorned for that. But honestly, they've been great this season. I mean, when you consider that until literally like maybe a month, 6 weeks ago, they did not have Ousmane Dembele because he was injured. They didn't have Philippe Coutinho. They were massively talent deficient on the wings. They were reliant on 33-year-old Andres Iniesta, who was, you know, because of his age, he just can't produce week to week. You know, for so much, and Messi was carrying them. I mean, this really, more than anything, is Messi's league title. He has absolutely carried the side to an extent, not even more so than when he was scoring all the goals. I mean, he still scored all the goals, but you know, he's just the heartbeat of the team, and it's been. But you know, they've been really, really good. I mean, they've created the second most chances in La Liga, 359 chances. They've made more passes than anyone, 17,822. They've won 30% of the tackles, which is the most. That's very interesting because they're usually not known for winning the tackles, but Valverde has made them a very defensive, combative side. They won 53% of their aerial duels. That's first as well. That speaks hugely of Piqué and Umtiti, by the way, because the rest of that team is like, what, 5-5?
Yeah.
You know, so that's really impressive on their part. 61% shot accuracy, which is first, which is a really impressive shot accuracy for a team to have. That's one thing. They've not been raining shots down on the opponent. They've not been playing the free-flowing, expansive football, but they've been very clinical when chances have presented themselves. They've taken the chances. They're kind of like a Serie A side more than anything else. They've got 16% shot conversion. 83 goals scored is the best in the league. I mean, I say they've not been expansive to score the most goals in the league, but you know, they should. This is a type of side that should be pushing 100 goals every season.
Yeah,
so they're about 20 goals short of where they should be. And second best defence, 19 conceded. And when the first best defence is Atletico Madrid, second best ain't bad.
Absolutely, that's definitely the case, and obviously it's their biggest game of the season to come because of the Champions League. And
well, it's the Clásico as well, which they might be able to win the league in. They might be able to win La Liga against Real Madrid, so that'd be interesting.
Absolutely. Sam, you got any views on this weekend?
No, I was just going to say about the point on the domestic double. Obviously, that's all well and good. You can't really argue with that, but I think that Barcelona are sort of at the stage of that level of club where their season is kind of defined by the Champions League. Mm-hmm.
It kind of is and it isn't. I mean, they're not like Real Madrid, where Real Madrid are just, they're obsessed with the Champions League, which, funny enough, Zinedine Zidane wants to win La Liga, but I think the club as a whole want to win the Champions League. I mean, Zidane said, I prefer to win La Liga, because as he said, rightly so, it points out that your side is great because it's the day-to-day, it's the week-to-week, and it shows how good your side is. But yeah, but you know, it's that thing where they've won so many league titles the last few years. They've won all but like two of the last... Since 2008, since Pep Guardiola got appointed, they've only lost two leagues. One to Atletico Madrid, one to Real Madrid. Two to Real Madrid, one to Atletico Madrid. So they've been so dominant on the domestic front, people now almost take that for granted. But it's really not. In a league, as I mean, you know, we talk about La Liga not being as competitive as Premier League, but it is. Their teams in there are great. And to win La Liga that many times over Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, you know, that's a really impressive achievement. Like, it's taken for granted, but it shouldn't be. You know, whether or not the season is defined by the Champions League, to a degree, in the sense that all elite sides are kind of defined by the Champions League, you know. Mm-hmm. But I always think that's kind of a misnomer, because the Champions League's a cup at the end of the day. You know, a few bad games, you can lose it. A few good games, you could win it without really playing well. It's rare, I would say, that the best team in the Champions League wins the Champions League.
That's what Pep said the other day, wasn't it? He was like, you know, Premier League is 38 games, Champions League is 7, so that kind
it's very hard for the best team in the league not to win the league. Spurs, 2015-16.
Exactly.
I mean, of course, it is always, like Mo says, you're a couple good games away from winning it, a couple bad games away from it. But I think you can tell a lot about a side when they do turn up on that big occasion, those Champions League nights, like Liverpool have done this season.
Absolutely.
They might not be the best team, but there's definitely it's a serious skill to have.
Nothing beats a cup run, mate. Nothing beats a cup run.
And Will, you looking forward to seeing Coutinho lift the trophy?
Yeah, well, he didn't win one with Liverpool.
That's true. And they might win the Champions League without him, so who knows?
Yeah, no, I find the Ernesto Valverde thing curious in that it seems like not a lot has been made of the history he's made there. Mm. And I don't know if that's a... Mo can probably shed more light on this, but I don't know if that's a byproduct of how he's changed them from a free-flowing attacking side to a more defensive side. Obviously, they've only conceded 19 goals in La Liga, which I think is second only to Atletico Madrid across Europe's top five leagues, pretty much. So, yeah, I think because they don't capture the imagination in quite the same way that Lucho and Guardiola did with Barcelona, then that's perhaps why he's not under the spotlight so much.
Yeah, it is. And he's not a fashionable manager. That's the other thing. He's not like a famous ex-player like Guardiola and Luis Enrique was. He's not like a really sexy choice like Jorge Sampaoli would have been. You know, he was a workaday manager, worked his way up through the leagues. He delivered a Super Cup with Athletic Bilbao, which was they beat Barcelona in 2016 very impressively. He made Athletic Bilbao really good. Although his final season a bit dodgy, but he's an unspectacular and solid tactician. He's exactly what they needed when he got appointed, a perfect coach. But he's now done such a good job, he's almost like coached himself out of like being qualified for it, because Barcelona now are back where they need to play really expansive opening football. Now let's be fair, let's see next season, because he's going to have Coutinho for the whole season, he's going to have Dembele bedded in with a full preseason. Dembele, remember, went on strike, didn't play preseason this year, and then spent half a season injured, so it's no surprise he's a bit out of shape and everything. But I think, talent deficiency has been major for Barca. Until like this last 6 weeks, they've really not had enough talent other than Messi. And because Suarez has been poor and really starting to age bad quite quickly. Mm-hmm. Which is why I think they'll go for a striker in the summer, by the way. I think, it's just they needed a bit more talent. They've actually bought the talent already. It's just they have to wait till they can play it all the time. I mean, if Coutinho could have played in the Champions League, they wouldn't have lost 3-0 to Roma. Just because it's... having a player like that and not having to rely constantly on an old Iniesta just transforms the team. Coutinho has been, in his brief cameos, he's looked really, really promising. You can see exactly what he brings the side, exactly the kind of energy and pace he can inject into the side, which is something Iniesta can't really do anymore on a consistent basis. And Dembele is sensational. I mean, Valverde not playing Dembele in Roma was just like mind-boggling.
Absolutely. And you're looking forward to seeing them next season. It should be fun to watch.
That should be much more fun to watch. But like Will says, he might win the league without losing again. I mean, Celta Vigo was going to be the hardest test and they passed it. They've got the Clásico, I suppose, as well, to be fair. But the man might win La Liga unbeaten, and everyone's like, okay.
Has that ever been?
No. No one's ever won Spanish League like this.
So we should point out as well the 40 game.
Is 40 games unbeaten. That's a record. They set that 39 games against Valencia, and then they extended it against Celta. They're doing really well. But it's kind of like Will says, I think it's because they're just not sexy, no pizzazz, because they've had a talent deficiency all season. Mm-hmm. But Valverde's done great though.
But this weekend, we reckon they'll be lifting the Copa del Rey trophy. Everyone, you thinking Barcelona?
Yeah, that's my prediction.
tough call. No, I think 3-1 Barca. I think Sevilla will give them a good game. They always do. But I think Barca have the quality to win out 3-1.
Cool. That's the Copa del Rey final this weekend. Okay, next up, PFA awards. It's obviously a straight shootout between De Bruyne and Salah for the main award. Sam, who are you going for?
I think first off, it's great that there's two players who are going for it. Mm-hmm. It's a bit frustrating sometimes when it's almost a foregone conclusion and someone runs away with it. So it's nice to have a bit of a battle going on. But I think for me, it's got to be Salah to score the amount of goals that he's done. It's just unbelievable.
Say I got here, he will equal the record for the most goals in a single 38 game Premier League season if he scores this weekend. So that just shows you the magnitude of how well he's done.
I don't think you can really argue with that. If he does that, then he should get it.
Mo might argue with that.
He will get it. I think he'll break it. I think he might even break Shearer's 42 game record as well, 34 goals. But there's already an award for scoring the most goals. It's called the Golden Boot.
Yeah.
Being the best player is about more than scoring goals. And people really have to... Yeah, they have this real problem with goal scorers. Oh, he's the best player. No, he's the best goal scorer. There's a difference. And goal scorers already get their own award. It's called the Golden Boot. You know, these best player awards, the Ballon d'Or, the Player of the Year, the World Player of the Year, all these things, they should look at more than just goals. Goals are important, obviously. But you look at De Bruyne, right? The guy's made Man City's midfield tick for the entire season. They have been the best side in the country by a distance. They've been the best Premier League side since Man United 2010, you know, in terms of being the most impressive, most close to, or if not at, the European elite. They've been phenomenal. They've played expansive football, beautiful football. De Bruyne has reworked himself, continued to. Remember, he was a winger when he came to Chelsea. Yeah. He's reworked himself. He's now a functional central midfielder, probably among the top five in the world, maybe top three, if you want to be generous. Mm-hmm. You know, he's absolutely incredible.
And obviously the fact that they won the title on the back of him being so good has to come into it.
I mean, yeah, the title is obviously is a massive thing as well. It shouldn't be everything, because this is an individual award, obviously.
Yeah.
But, and look, you will not find a bigger non-Egyptian Mohamed Salah fan than me. You just won't. But, you know, you just check my Twitter if you don't believe me. But, no, there's Kevin De Bruyne has been the best player in the Premier League this year. I just think the way Man City have played and the fundamentality of his role in that system. It's not like he's, I mean, with the greatest respect, let's say Sergio Aguero or Fernandinho or, you know, players who are important but aren't the bedrock of the system. There is no Man City without Kevin De Bruyne playing that role. Like, you can see, you saw they cope without David Silva. You saw they cope without Fernandinho. They cope without Aguero. They cope without Sané and Sterling. Maybe not so much. Maybe they're up there as well. But then that's for the other award, isn't it? But
absolutely.
There is no Man City without Kevin De Bruyne. It's absolutely important. And it's ridiculous that it's even a consideration, really.
I would say that there is no Liverpool without Salah as well, though. And if you take Salah's goals away from Liverpool, I mean, he's propelled Liverpool to much greater heights than anyone really expected them to. If you took De Bruyne out that team, out of the Man City team, I don't think he'd be missed as much as if you took Salah out of the Liverpool team.
Also, we shouldn't just boil Salah down to his goals. He's got 9 assists.
That's true.
And even if we were just to boil his this season down to his goals, you can't argue with the fact, as Sam says, he's making history. Yeah. He's probably going to break the record. He's scored more goals in a single season than the likes of Drogba, Van Persie, Crespo. Like, these are sort of legendary strikers. And he's, over the course of a single season, he's beaten them.
Oh yeah, you have to sell me on Mohamed
Salah. I think
he's fantastic. I think he's absolutely miraculous. But
that's why I would go for Salah. Yeah. But although I do think
De Bruyne, well, De Bruyne is going to have his own award as well in the
playmaker
playmaker award.
Well, he's still got a few games to sort of get Thierry Henry's 20 assist record as well, so he could make.
He's on so far.
You know what? I don't think he does it. I think that record seems impervious.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I mean, Ozil was going to walk it that one year, then Giroud was like, no, I'm not going to bother scoring anymore, mate.
But if Henrik Mkhitaryan can get 3 assists in one game, I can't see why.
Take one
performance like that.
No, see, that's the thing, because it's the way City play. De Bruyne so often is the guy making the pass. As the guy who gets the assist, you know, he's the guy spreading out wide, and it's the function of City's play that doesn't, you know, it doesn't lend itself to this. But then assist is great, but it's not always like the greatest indicator of credit quality. I mean, let's remember, Xavi and Iniesta never ever got as many assists as Cesc Fabregas has in his best seasons. And I mean, who would you rather have in your side? So
that's a good point. Yeah. Do you know, I think the assist award is very much kind of in case he doesn't win the main award. Kevin De Bruyne has still got an award because he's been so good. What were you going to say, Sam? Sorry.
I was going to say it's difficult with assists. So if Salah's going for the golden boot, you know, all the Liverpool players will know that, and you can pass on the ball with assists. It's a bit more difficult to try and sort of I need 3 assists to win the award. So you know, before you score, make sure you give it to me.
Yeah.
But it's much more difficult to try and sort of build into your play.
But like Will said, it's just good to have 2 players on top of their game in the Premier League.
It's great. The more players at the top of the game in the Premier League that they have, the better. Like if Mourinho wasn't such a Mourinho, you know, we could have Pogba and Alexis Sanchez up there as well. I mean, United have phenomenal talent in their side. I mean, good God. Harry Kane is great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had the injury. I think we've not took him down a bit. But, you know, imagine if we had Kane and Salah batting out for the golden boot, and then, you know, Pogba and Alexis Sanchez and Kevin De Bruyne and those kind of players for the player. And Eden Hazard. He's got a Real Madrid in the summer, but, you know. There's a lot of talent in the Premier League. If we get it all performing in one season, we'd have one hell of a campaign.
Agreed.
Also touching on that, Salah, if he breaks the record, everyone's sort of voting and talking about the award now. Why don't we wait to the end of the season so then we can actually decide what these players have done? We're trying to pick who deserves the award when Salah could score 15 goals in his last games and absolutely smash the records to pieces. But then De Bruyne gets the the award. It just doesn't make sense to do it before the end of the season.
And you can certainly, whoever wins it, we can justify it in quite a number of ways.
There's not
a
bad choice among out of those two. You know,
and moving on also with the PFA awards, I've got some strong opinions here, I know. Is it time to revisit the criteria for the Young Player Award? Because I think I've got a stat here that Harry Kane made the shortlist and he turns 25 in July. That's ridiculous, isn't it?
He'll claim it.
We made it 45 minutes in.
I thought that was the worst stat, but I think there's one worse. He won it 3 years ago.
Yeah.
He won
the
Young Player Award in 2015.
Mm.
Three years later, he's eligible again. Yeah. I mean, that kind of speaks to the fact that he started banging the goals in at quite a young age, but as well. To win it and then have a 3 year break and then pick it up again.
It's just one of those things. I understand why, because you want 23 year olds to be eligible, but I think it should be if you're 22 at the start of the season. Mm. Then, and that way you're maximum going to get like a 24 year old, but not. But also maybe there needs to be a bit of consideration when you consider nominations. Okay, the rule is this, but then you look at Harry Kane and think, okay, well, he's eligible, but we shouldn't include him.
No, of course
Edison
not.
Is eligible, but let's not include him. The guy turned 24 the day before the season started. It's the 2 days after or before the season started. It's like, come on. Just a bit of
it's kind of like the parameters are based on the old school kind of traditional peaking of a player that you can still be young. If you're 21, 22, you're not really a young player anymore.
No, because it's playing. I mean, look at Sessegnon, 17, isn't he, in the championship? And I think he could be up for it.
I mean, I was going to say 22 is the cutoff, but now you mentioned Sessegnon, and now I'm thinking, bloody hell, yeah.
He's probably an exceptional case, to be fair. Yeah, I mean, it's one of them. Sam, you also mentioned that you think you should only win it once, right? Once you've won it once, you shouldn't be eligible.
Yeah,
again.
I mean,
you then go into the main.
It
award,
comes
perhaps.
Back to the sort of. I think what would be more fitting would probably be like a sort of American style of rookie of the season or sort of breakthrough season where it's your first season. But then you get into the complications of you might have had sort of 5 or 6 starts and 10 appearances off the bench, and that would go down as your first season when really it would be your second season that you want to be counted as your breakthrough season.
Plus, rookie of the season is kind of difficult in English football because there isn't a constant influx of players from the college game, which is where you know that comes from. Mm. I think the current system is okay. I think you just lower the age from 23 at the start of the season to 22 at the start of the season, and you just use common sense. If someone is like 24 for most of the season or whatever, then you just like, let's not give this guy, let's not nominate this guy, even if he plays well. Mm. I just think you lower the age by 1 year, that will help, and then just be a bit more judicious when you're picking players.
Absolutely.
And I don't know about the only winning it once thing though, because I kind of like that Dele Alli won it back to back.
He's on for a hat-trick as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's never been done before. I mean, he probably won't.
But I kind of think that if you win the Young Player Award, then you've progressed to a senior player then. I think it's
if you're 17? What if you're like 18 or 19, you win the Young Player Award, some amazing teenager wins the Young Player Award? I mean, then, you know, maybe he's not as good as, let's say, a 28-year-old in the league, but he could win the Young Player Award like 3 years in a row. Like, I mean, Kylian Mbappe, for instance, is not as good as Neymar, but, I mean, if I don't know if they have the award in Liga, but, you know, you'd give Kylian Mbappe the Young Player Award for the next 3 years. He's not going to beat Neymar for the Player Award, is he? So, that's just the point.
Like you mentioned, I think maybe a bit of common sense comes into it. Like Harry Kane being eligible this season does seem crazy, and that's probably an exceptional case.
Yeah. He's going to win it, though, isn't he?
I think he probably will.
He's voted by players as well. I think sometimes if they're unsure, I think they just look at the goal scored column and
surely
depends when they're voting.
I would vote for Sané myself.
Yeah Sané
but,
too.
You can't. He's going to have scored a lot of goals this season. People will.
Depends when that claim came in for the Eriksen goal.
Do you reckon that's harmed his campaign?
Oh, I might have irked a few.
Yeah. His PR level. He was like, everyone loved Harry Kane. And now everyone's sort of like, really?
I kind of like it though. It's the first sort of.
It's a bit of personality.
It's the first time he's like stepped off the.
Yeah, but it's,
like
it's
the
such
straight
a really,
narrow.
It's such a petty way to step off the straight and narrow. It's like, look how childish I am. I want that goal, and it's like, that wasn't your goal, Harry. Come on, man. But.
I don't know. He gave his truthful verdict on the man.
He swore on his life. So.
Yeah, you know, he wants the goal. It's fine. He'll give us lots of good memes on Twitter. It's all good.
Absolutely. And he's had another fantastic season. Fair play to him.
He's an amazing player. I mean, not knocking him, but he's,
Cool. So I think we'll wrap things up there. The return of the Scorker Talker. Thanks to Will. Thanks to Sam. And thanks to Mohammed. And we'll see you next time. Yeah.